All right, everybody, this is Chase March, and I have a special guest on the program right now, author of Bully in the Mirror, Making Hate Stop When You Don't Think You Can, Shania Fostier. How's it going, Shania?
It's going really well. How's it going with you?
Pretty good, thanks. I read your book, Bully in the Mirror, cover to cover, and I know there's some people out there that say, well, bullying is just natural, it's just part of a childhood, I had to put up with it when I grew up, and it's just something that kids outgrow, and it's normal.
Oh, no, no. There is nothing natural about it. Most people sometimes say, you know, bullying is normal, it happens all the time, everybody goes through it. But it is not in any shape or form or way normal. You know, it becomes not normal when kids feel mental pain with or without physical pain. And I think that also parents have to see that what they believe was normal is no longer normal. And it's all about a lack of education on the subject. And I think that once people educate themselves about the realities of bullying and living in this society basically as a kid or a teenager, that it isn't normal because it does cause pain, and anything that causes pain is not normal.
You know, this book is incredible, and just on the conversation we've already had up until this point, I think a lot of people would be surprised to find out that you're a teenager.
Yeah, I get that way often. I mean, I'm only 13. I just graduated high school last year. So I do get a lot that people don't really comprehend that I'm actually 13. But I've gotten definitely used to it.
It's pretty impressive and inspirational what you've already been able to do. And Bully in the Mirror isn't even your first book, is it?
No, this is my fourth book. It's Bully in the Mirror, my fifth. I'm currently working on my fifth book, which is going to be my first fiction mystery suspense novel. And I'm currently negotiating on piloting out my fifth book for film. And also I'm currently negotiating also my fourth book for film because I just opened my own production company. I have a license and I'm working on producing different projects. And I would love to produce any of my books into some kind of film or television or some kind of series.
Wow, that's incredible. Amazing.
Thank you.
Just on a personal connection here, I read your book cover to cover, and you mentioned on page 85 that you read Psycho-Cybernetics. And I remember reading that at your age.
Wow, how interesting.
Yeah, the title alone in that book sounds like it's something that, you know, it would scare a lot of people off from reading.
I should read that. No.
It was a good read. Psycho-Cybernetics. And so is this, Bully in the Mirror. And you know what's interesting? You address it a little bit in here, but I started a Facebook page this year because I wanted to open up the lines of communication between home and school, and I thought it would be a good tool to be able to use to talk with parents and students. But just recently, I was cyberbullied on it.
Wow. Oh yeah. Cyberbullying has become such a large, you know, bullying itself has actually become a social epidemic because it used to be where, you know, kids would just start fights and there would be fights and it would be all physical and it would be name calling. And now it's gotten to a point where cyberbullying is now in existence. And kids are now bullying each other using social media like Facebook or Twitter, email, text messaging. And it's okay for kids to go on Facebook and Twitter, but sometimes it becomes an obsession, it becomes an addiction. And this addiction goes a step further, and sometimes the kids think they're inferior or superior because they can always disguise themselves using anonymous names, and it becomes very dangerous. And it's becoming to a point where now more and more kids are committing suicide because of their being cyberbullied. And now cyberbullying, you know, sometimes it can be by their own friends. It's probably one of the more dangerous, next to physical bullying, dangerous forms of bullying.
Yeah, so when I got cyberbullied, I was able to shake it off for the most part. But I look at some of the other profiles and things, and I see that this is a regular way that kids are talking on Facebook, putting down people. And if I was a student, you know, and if I was a kid and I had to go through that, especially on like a daily basis of receiving comments like that, I don't know if I'd be able to handle it.
Yeah, and it can cause the same exact damage, this verbal harassment over the internet, as any other form of bullying. And it can lead to suicide. Any form of bullying can lead to suicide, and any form of bullying can lead to depression. And it goes a step further. Some kids don't keep it in the guidelines and the boundaries. They always go a step further, and the step further is very dangerous. And you know, it's kids do have a hard time handling it. I mean, I've been bullied, but of course I don't like comparing my bullying stories to other kids, because of course it hasn't necessarily been severe. Because I've learned to grow self-confidence and self-esteem at a very long age, very young age. So I know, and I've been cyberbullied, and it's been one of those things where, you know, it's very ridiculous, actually, the way that kids now talk to each other. It's like there's no morals, there's no respect or dignity, and I wanna actually help bring some of those morals back into kids' lives.
Yeah, I wanted to use this as a teachable moment, you know, and show kids that it's not okay to talk like this online, and that you should watch carefully what you say, and don't press send or don't press publish if you think it's gonna hurt, belittle, or demean somebody. But when I brought this to my principal about the cyberbullying going on Facebook, he said, shut it down. So I had to shut down the site. And part of the problem, he said, is this is the culture of Facebook. This is what they do, and this is how kids are talking on Facebook, and that's not something that we're gonna be able to change.
It's become like a lifestyle almost, but I believe that if bullies, or let's put it into this term, bullies are not born bullies. It's a learned behavior. And since bullies learned to act like this, or they learned to act ugly to others, then they can also learn to change. And I think that where the world is constantly changing, everybody is constantly changing, and I believe there is always room for change, and there is always room for better, and it starts with one person. I mean, when somebody sees one person doing something good, like let's say somebody is being cyberbullied on Facebook, and if one person comments, you know, that's not right, or stop, or I'm going to report you, you know, then another person is going to step in, and another person. It's a chain reaction. It goes the same with physical bullying and verbal. It's all a chain reaction, and people can't give up too easily, because quitting means stopping a momentum. It means ending a chain reaction, and we can't really end that, because it's important. This is the sake of our generation of kids and their safety.
Yeah, we have this program in our school board up here called Be an Upstander, and it basically means you shouldn't just stand by and watch something happen. So don't be the bystander, but stand up, do something about it, and become an upstander.
Of course. No, definitely. One of the main keys to reduce bullying is the bystander. And because sometimes a victim might be scared to tell an adult, or they might feel threatened by the bully. And so it's the bystander's basically job to go and get help, and to go and tell. Because, I mean, victims actually have the true power, but sometimes victims mistake it for they don't have any power, and the bullies have all the power over them. But in reality, the bullies are only pretending to use the victim's power as their own to trick the victim into thinking that they're powerless. Because bullies are actually weak, they're very weak-minded. And since they're so weak, they can learn to build the strength of their own mind, just like victims can. Everybody needs to work hand in hand in this situation. It's not just the victims that need to work on their self-esteem or self-confidence. It's the bullies too. And I think parents have to have a big part in making this happen. And I think that parents need to step up and come forward to their children and talk to their children and help them get through whatever issue there's going on, no matter what time they get home from work or et cetera, et cetera. Because everything comes from home. I mean, the parents are the role models. And if the kids see that their parents are willing to help, then they'll feel like they're not really alone, because that's all victims really feel, is that they're alone, and that's why they're so scared to go and tell if they are being bullied or hurt.
You have some good advice in this book too. On page 84, you write about how we can sometimes tend to be a little bit too hard on ourselves, and then you say, quote, "If you think it, you have the power to think it differently. Every negative thought can become a positive one. If you think it, you can do it."
Yes,
Very wise words there.
Thank you. I believe that every problem has a solution. And I like looking at things not as problems, but as problems that need solutions. And instead of focusing on the negativity of the problem, I like to focus on a more positive side and think, okay, how can I fix this? Because it's not that nothing's going to change and nothing is going to get fixed if you keep dwelling on a problem or if you keep dwelling on negativity. So there's always a way to switch it around. People just need to take a few minutes to relax, take a breather, and learn to do it to think the right way. And once people learn to think in a more positive way, then we'll learn to act in a positive way.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is the television programs that kids are consuming these days. I mean, when I was a kid, we have Family Channel and it was pretty tame, you know, Disney cartoons and family-oriented films. But nowadays, Family Channel is showing these teenage sitcoms all the time. And I watched some of them recently and it's quite horrible the way the characters treat each other. They name call, there's disrespect, they put each other down, there's backstabbing, there's conniving and mischief and all this sort of stuff going on. And I just wonder if that's the role model that kids are seeing and that's the kind of programming that they're consuming, then, you know, that's got to have some kind of effect on them too.
Kids revolve around basically pop culture and whatever they're looking at, they're going to transpose into their own lives. And I, working out of Los Angeles, California, I'm working on, like I mentioned previously, my production company to produce a few series and films. And I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to change that part of the industry. It's very true that kids are learning all of this, you know, they're learning to become more negative and more mischievous by watching all these television shows. And it should change, and it's able to change, but it's becoming such a larger, and every minute it's getting larger, that every minute we wait, it's going to just get bigger and it's going to get harder. So it's very important to act now, basically, and that's what I'm currently working on every single day with my production company. And so, you know, it's sad that, I mean, it didn't used to necessarily be like the way it is now with these TV shows, but it has a lot to do with, I mean, everybody obviously knows about bullying, and I think it has a lot to do with, okay, so this is in the media now, let's put this into a TV show and make fun of this character because this is funny. But it's not funny. It's hurtful.
You have some advice in your book about how we can help change things. On page 119, you talk about an anti-bullying pledge. And we actually have one of those in our school board up here. All the students took it at the start of the year. But in your book, you discuss how you can go to format one and how you'd go ahead about starting one and writing it. You also talk about how you can set up anti-bullying teams.
Yes. I also have an exercise in the book about talking to yourself in a mirror and setting goals for yourself. Because it happens, you know, some people are very verbal people and some people are physical people. And when you look at yourself in the mirror and you set a goal for yourself, you know, it's you subconsciously soak up what you're saying to the mirror and what you're saying to yourself, that you're going to basically do it basically without thinking about it. And the anti-bullying teams, yes, I believe that it's one person, like I said, when one person does something, another person will follow in their footsteps. And it eventually, when a few kids come together, it can be a team and they can work as a team and work together on finding new ways to stop bullying in their own school. Because in reality, we need to start one school at a time. Because it does take one school at a time. It's one person at a time, one step at a time. And when if kids, let's say, in there's five anti-bullying teams in, let's say, like Seattle, Washington, in the middle schools there, then it'll slowly demolish in those schools, and maybe the other schools will hear about this, and they will follow in those footsteps. And so it's basically all about starting. Somebody needs to start. Somebody needs to begin change. And I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that start. And that's what I'm doing. I'm starting that change. And then there has to be a middle where you work on the change, where the change is continuing to change. And then at the end, where there's success, when there are fewer much fewer bullies as there are in one school than there was, let's say, a month previous. So it basically, people sometimes want to rush into things, but you can't really rush. You have to think as the quickest solution to one problem, and then work on the next, and then the next, and then the next. It's very cautious, one step at a time kind of ordeal.
Wow, you are an inspiration. I mean, you're doing so many things. You've written quite a few books. You have a lot of things in the works, and you even have speaking engagements. And hopefully you're inspiring and educating the youth. And that's really cool to see.
Thank you so much. Daily, pretty much every single day, I get phone calls, text messages, emails, et cetera, from kids who say that they need my help or that they're suffering from bullying, that they want advice and they want to tell me their story and there's some are suicidal. It's definitely a job all in its own. And, you know, it's hard to sometimes keep up with all of it, but what I really love doing it. And so it definitely does not bother me that I get all these phone calls. I want kids to come to me because I want kids to feel like they're not alone, and I want kids to realize that I am here and somebody is there. And I've gotten calls from kids that I visited their schools 2 years previous, and they kept my card ever since. There's this one particular story. I think it was about a year and a half ago. I went to an elementary / middle school to give a presentation to the kids there. And the counselor had come up to me and she said, you know, there's a particular little boy here who we've been having a lot of trouble with because he's been being bullied very, very severely. And she asked me if I can take maybe a few minutes to just speak with him and just give him some encouraging words and just kind of just help him a little bit. And I met him after my presentation. We sat in the auditorium and I ended up spending probably over an hour with this little boy. I believe he was only 9 years old, and he had already tried committing suicide, I believe, twice, and he had been to a rehabilitation center about four times. He was bullied mostly because he was a very, very good, smart kid. He's an A student. He has bright, bright, bright red hair, and they would make fun of him for that. And he was just a little bit overweight, and he felt so in pain that he felt like he had to commit suicide. And he was only 9 years old. And I spent an over an hour with him, talking to him, helping him through his problems, hearing his stories, making sure he knew I was there, that I was there to help him, basically that I was there for him to vent to. And I, at the end of the hour session I had with him, I gave him my business card with my phone number on it and my email, and I told him that if he needed any more help, that I was available 24/7, doesn't matter what day, what time it was, that to just call me or text me, and he said okay. And I stayed thinking about him for days, and I decided to sign him a book from me, one of my earlier books, one of my first three books, and also design a composition book for him, because a few years back I used to make jewelry and design composition books for charity. And I designed one for him, I signed him a book, and I wrote him a letter. And I went to the school, I believe, the next week, exactly a week later, and asked the counselor if I can see him again. And she brought me to his classroom, and he came out, and we talked in the hall, and I gave him the package. And after he went back into class, the counselor went up to me, and she said, you know, she basically gave me this letter that he had actually written for me. And she said that he had been such a happier kid since I had spoken to him, that he was focusing in school and his classes more. He was smiling, he was laughing again, and he was trying to make friends again. And I was very happy, of course. And I went home and I opened the letter and I read it. And basically he said, you know, I wanted to thank you for helping me and not having me think about killing myself anymore, because I don't think of committing suicide anymore because you helped me. And he basically said, thank you. And I've kept that letter. I read every single letter kids sign to me. I have thousands and thousands, stacks and stacks here in California and in Texas. And I read every single one. And I think that Brian, his letter is very, very special to me because I had such a personal experience with him.
Yeah, I think the power of talk is a very important and powerful thing. And sometimes kids might not have someone they can talk to. For whatever reason at home, they don't have someone they can confide in, or they're not sure how to bring up the topic. I just want my students to know that as a teacher, and I'm sure most of the teachers are like this too, you can come to teachers with your problems and we will be here to listen. But it's also encouraging to know that there's people out there like you that are able to listen, that we have Kids Help Phone and things like that, because talking through a problem is sometimes one of the best ways to help get around it and to solve it.
I believe that victims and kids feel so scared to talk because, I mean, they don't really know who to trust. And I believe that teachers and parents sometimes don't necessarily know what to do, but some do. I mean, I just hope that kids realize, and I teach kids to realize, that they're not alone. And if you see that anybody is having trouble and or anybody seems sad or depressed or a little bit mad, maybe, you know, it's important to get down to their level and sit eye level with them. And I teach parents, I've given workshops to parents and teachers about how to address little kids and middle schoolers, and to look at them eye level, because sometimes it's intimidating for a kid to see an adult towering over them when they're trying to help them. I mean, they're scared. They're being bullied. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to trust. But when somebody goes down to their level, when somebody's eye level with them, they feel more of a connection. They feel safer. And I believe that's also why I've had such a success with kids, is because I am a kid. I know what kids go through. I mean, I've had friends who have been at the verge of suicide, and I have helped them. So I've had a hands-on experience with kids, and I think that kids feel a connection to me because they know that I understand them. And I think that a lot of people are able to understand them. I think that kids just need to be able to feel safe, and for kids to feel safe, they need to feel like they have a connection with somebody.
I like how you talk about teachers in the book too, because, you know, some students and some teenagers are just quick to put down their teachers all the time and complain, but you actually have some respect and praise and admiration for teachers in this book, and it was quite refreshing to see.
No, I think that teachers are fantastic. Teachers are great. Teachers are doing their job. I mean, I have a lot of respect for teachers and human teaching and human development, and I believe that everybody has something to learn from anyone that they cross, whether it be to learn from a mistake, or to learn not to act a certain way, or to even learn something positive, learn a new thing. And I think that teachers are very important in doing that, because they're teaching kids, you know, they're teaching kids, and it's every single day, and it's constant. And I want to help kids realize that teachers aren't there to hurt anybody. They're not there to make you feel small. Teachers are there to help you. And hopefully kids will realize that, and that's what I try and have kids realize. And same with parents. Parents, sometimes they just don't know what to do. It's all about lack of education. So once kids realize that, you know, it's not necessarily that they don't care, it's that they don't know what to do. But once kids speak up, then there's going to be a better chance in fixing the problem.
We're speaking with Shania Fostier, author of Bully in the Mirror, Making Hate Stop When You Don't Think You Can. Can you tell people out there how they can find out more about you and how they can get a copy of your book?
Yeah, but I have a website. My website is just my name. It's ShaniaFostier.com. You can buy Bully in the Mirror at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Amazon. Again, you can contact me also directly from my website, which is www.shanayafastje.com. And there's a contact form where I receive emails directly and I'm able to respond. So there, and I would love to hear from people, and I love hearing from people, and yeah, my book is available basically around the world.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me today. This has been awesome. I mean, you're such an inspiration at so young and all the things that you're doing with the writing and the speaking engagements and everything else. It's nice to see that you're just not, you know, sitting around watching TV, that you're actively out there creating things. I mean, in this day and age, it's so easy with the computer technology we have these days to get out and do something creative.
It's very simple, and I think kids just need to find what they're passionate about. I mean, everybody's passionate about something, everybody loves to do something, and everybody's good at something, and kids just need to find what they love doing. And I actually, I'm also on top of everything else. I'm working on music. I put out already 2 singles on iTunes. I'm actually going to go film today for my next video/cover song that I'm going to put out. I'm working on creating my own music album, and I have my own music label, so I'm also working on music along with television, film, writing. I mean, they're all passions of mine, and I'm honored to have been given the opportunity to be able to work on all of them.
Well, I wish you nothing but success and good luck in all of your endeavors.
Thank you. That is exactly what I hope as well.
Yep, we've been speaking to Shania Fastier, author of Bully in the Mirror, Making Hate Stop When You Don't Think You Can. It's been an awesome discussion. Thank you so much.
All right, I had a great time. Bye, have a nice day.